Welcome to the second podcast for the North Fulton Drama Club. My name is Thomas Strickland, and round from my right, around back to my left, we have...
Nikki Strickland.
Alyssa Jackson.
Eileen Miller.
Eileen Miller is our special guest. We will introduce her later. So we just had our opening weekend. For those that do not know, we are performing Love's Labor's Lost at Barrington Hall in Roswell, Georgia. Today is May 14th. So we just survived May 12th and May 13th. And if this gets on the podcast network before May 19th, come on out for the third and fourth and therefore last shows of Love's Labor's Lost in Barrington Hall. Let's go around. How was opening weekend?
It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. It's weird because it's like when you open a show, it's all very sort of concentrated and crazy and a million miles an hour up until when you open, and then at that point, once the first scene starts, it's, you know, 85% or whatever completely out of your hands. So it's actually sort of relaxing. You deal with the stuff you can deal with, and the rest of it no one can do anything about anyway, so you might as well relax.
I was freaking out, I'll be perfectly honest, when I got there on Friday, because I did not have the luxury of having the day off work. I had to come straight from the office and got stuck in traffic on 285 and was horrified. But everything went really well. And aside from a minor panic on Saturday that we were going to get rained out, the weather cooperated. Our audiences,
we had three great cacklers last night.
Yeah, which was awesome. We had 50 plus audiences both nights, which was, I think, way more than we had anticipated, which was awesome.
Yeah.
So it was, I think it went very, very well on the dual part of being a producer and as an actor, for me, both aspects went very well.
And Eileen, what do you do for us for the play?
I am playing the Princess of France in the play. And
what did you think of opening weekend?
I thought it felt great. I mean, it went smoothly. Any line flubs were covered fairly well. Didn't experience any major technical difficulties. Everybody worked with everything that happened, and just in general, it was a lot of fun.
I am more than pleased with our opening weekend. As I will repeat it again, weather cooperated.
Such a happy thing.
Especially last night, because it was like, oh, please do not rain. Do not rain.
Please.
We'll talk more later about the perils of outdoor production, but weather is the biggest thing. You can get past wind chill, you can get past climate, you can get past bugs, but weather...
Costume malfunction.
Costume malfunction, we can work with that, but torrential rain, can't do a thing about that at all. The question that we're asked often, we were asked this during an interview with the Roswell neighbor.
Which turned into an interview also with the Alpharetta neighbor, but
yes,
we didn't know that.
We didn't know that. We were doubly neighbored. Thank you, neighbor. Is why choose Shakespeare? As if Shakespeare would be...
a weird choice.
A weird choice, especially for a fledgling company. To my mind, Shakespeare is not... I don't want to say it's not that challenging, but it's not that extreme of a choice to make.
Maybe Hamlet, okay. Like,
perhaps
that would be a big undertaking. For our first production, let's do Hamlet, the longest play ever known to man, revered by everyone everywhere as the best play ever, or, you know, whatever your opinion of it is. I mean, okay, Hamlet might have been a bit of an extreme choice, but Shakespearean comedy doesn't strike me as, you know...
Well, I think a lot of people have such a fear of Shakespeare. It's so intimidating to them that to have someone just jump right into it, a lot of people may see that as a weird choice. I don't particularly. I mean, but I think just a lot of people don't realize that there's as much of an audience for it as there is.
And I think a lot of people put, especially ones who are not as fluent in Shakespeare, who don't read a lot of it and aren't exposed to it, put it up on a pedestal. It's Shakespeare, and it must be done like this, and it's intimidating and it's hard to approach. And as we had discussed earlier, Shakespeare's comedies were, well, Shakespeare was written for the people, and it's written, his comedies are very base. You don't have to be intelligent. I mean, once you get past the language, and even my sister and her fiance who came to see the show and who are admittedly not Shakespeare scholars were like, well, we didn't understand every word, but we understood the gist of what was going on and we could appreciate the comedy from that. And so it's accessible on all levels.
That's the point of it. So
accessibility. And I mean, I'll be completely honest. One of the benefits of starting off with Shakespeare is name recognition. You know, someone mentioned, well, why don't you start off with like Ibsen or something out like that? Like, well, that's very nice, but no one...
Name five
people that remember Henrik Ibsen's A Doll's House, and they probably read it during, you know, Creative Lit and didn't
hated
like
it.
But you say Shakespeare, and people will either come to see it because they're fans of Shakespeare, or because they're looking for culture, or, let's be honest, because they want to appear as if they are culture.
Indeed.
Which, there's nothing wrong with that. If it draws people in simply because it's Shakespeare, great. And if it's comedy, it might be even a bit easier to bring people into the fold. Which is why we chose Love's Labor's Lost. Part of the reason why we chose Love's Labor's Lost. Does anyone else want to field why we chose that one?
No physical combat. no wrestling.
There's no wrestling, and wrestling is in As You Like It.
It was the other one. Yeah,
and there's no fistulas, which is in I believe Comedy of Errors has fistulas in it, which is kind of disgusting.
And my brain just turned off. The disguise element, the cross-identification that occurs in a lot of Shakespeare's comedies with the cross-dressing and which complicates the plots and everything is far minimal. It's one tiny scene in our show, and it's very obviously not... You're supposed to know what's going on.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be... The boys dressed up as the Muscovites is supposed to be exactly as ridiculous as it looks, thank God, because...
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Nikki and I's experience of making the disguise is a story that has to be told.
I agree.
I mean, and also most convenient, there's everything takes place in Love, Slippers, Lost in the same location. I mean, other plays say, now we're on the battlement, now we're in the court, now we're here, now we're there. This, it's somewhere in the King's Park. So, awesome. We don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
We don't have to convince the audience that we're taking them somewhere else. It's all taking place in the same location. And especially given where we're doing it at Barrington Hall, which is basically...
An old plantation house. Yeah.
It makes perfect sense.
Well, and the other thing with this particular play is that, say, with Midsummer, for example, people have this idea, because you see it a lot, people have an idea of sort of what they expect. And this play is underplayed, for sure. It's underdone. Well, that sounds like I'm talking about steak. Whatever. People don't do it enough. And it's, by all accounts, in my personal opinion, and in a lot of the reading I've done, it's underrated. It's really funny. I mean, the more we read it, the funnier it is. But it's not very well known. So we were able to get away with a lot. We were able to get away with picking whatever time period we wanted. No one is going to come to this play with any kind of a preconception of what it, quote unquote, should look like, because literally I think we're the three people who have read it, you know, unless someone's an English major, thank you for reading it, you know, and keeping it alive. But
or they had the misfortune of viewing the very, very poor adaptation by Kenneth Branagh, which attempted to turn it into a musical, which is bad. It's bad. It's frankly, it, by all, anyone who's ever seen it knows it has said it's pretty bad.
The cover art just screams terrifyingly, hideously bad.
I have yet to see it. I am purposely, I'm saving it so that after this production is over, we can all get together and
cast party.
Have some adult beverages and watch Kenneth Branagh's version of what we have done.
I think that is an excellent idea.
I think there's a drinking game that could possibly become.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we can come up with one.
Something with Kenneth Branagh's facial expressions.
Every time Kenneth Branagh's ego is evident on stage.
Oh, we will be sure.
Just keep drinking the whole time. So yes, we're doing this outside. Those who didn't catch that already, we're doing this not in Barrington Hall, because that would be a very small and confined space. We're doing this in the backyard of Barrington Hall in Roswell, which means we are outside on the lawn. So that poses a few challenges. As an actress, what are some of the challenges you've had to encounter and overcome?
Not standing in the hole.
The ground at Barrington Hall is remarkably uneven.
And seeing as my, I guess, love interest in the play
is already a foot taller than
me. My toy is already much, much taller than me, and if I am unfortunately standing in the hole, it looks like I'm a midget. So there's that. And just in general, trying to keep a very even, stately gait when walking over very uneven ground is a little bit challenging. There's the bugs. There's the freezing temperatures that we had in May for some reason the other night when all the girls are in sleeveless party dresses.
And look smashing.
Yes, but it's very cold.
It's the one thing that we absolutely, literally never crossed our minds.
No.
And any of the problems we thought we were going to have doing outdoor theater in May, having 40 degree weather at night was never something we anticipated.
No, it was completely unexpected for any of us. We were afraid about
being hot,
being the other way around.
40 degrees with 20 mile an hour wind,
and trying not to shiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The challenges of outdoor theater include keeping the tent set up backstage for the ladies. Changing area from flying away.
Literally.
Like something in
The Wizard of Oz.
That was my main function last night. I was so happy that y'all were not there. The ladies had left. They were going to enter from the other side, and the wind blew, and the tent made a 45 degree angle with the ground.
I'm really glad you weren't there too.
And I thought something was going to break, but we eventually got it stuck to the ground, and it didn't move after that, and I don't know why, but I don't care if it was gnomes holding it down. I'm fine with that. It just didn't fall down.
The wind also creates the problem of volume.
Yes.
When the wind is blowing, you never know where your words are going to go. The wind literally blows them away. So something that we knew we were going to have to fight When for some reason, when the sun goes down, the wind dies down. Yeah. So we had a very nice, every night during rehearsals for our final week, as soon as the sun went down, you could miraculously hear everyone better. But specifically last night, the wind continued, partly because we had thunderstorms earlier in the day, and it was the rest of the weather sort of blowing through, I guess. And it, you know, affected volume. And unfortunately, we had to, as directors, we had to constantly remind people, volume, volume, and it gets such a horrible note, but you can't help it.
And I think that is just added to the list, whether it's windy or not, for outdoor theater, because you have nothing for the sound to bounce off of. Most of us are used to projecting at a certain level because you have a stage, you have walls around you, you have a ceiling for your voice to bounce off of, and they're ideally set up with good acoustics so that it helps you. When you're outside, there's nothing for it to bounce off of, and only things, it seems like, that will completely eat the sound.
Yeah.
Like the house itself.
Like the house itself.
Although I haven't noticed, because I haven't been able to be as typically where I am. During rehearsal, you know, we're out in front, but I'm backstage, so I can't tell if the curtains that we put up to make the big porch, you know, not be visible so the boys can be backstage there, I can't tell if that's affected the acoustics or not. I hope it has in a positive way.
It can only help.
It can't get worse.
I don't think it can make it any worse.
But, you know, people are learning huge lessons in projection, which will serve them well when hailing a cab.
Indeed.
I was going to ask another question, but you did bring up something interesting. Costuming for this show has been fun?
Yeah,
it has been fun.
It was an awesome time. And one of the most fun things happened right at the beginning. I sound like a 10-year-old. One of the most fun things.
There was this one time?
Yeah. No, when we went to Goodwill on the very first day that we were shopping, and we found one of the girls in the play wears this
electric
insanity
green dress.
It's so cute, though.
It's precious. Well, we found it, and literally we're at a Goodwill where you wouldn't think, you're thinking you're going to find like ratty 80s t-shirts and hideous cast-offs from the 90s.
Well, there are some of those
period,
as well.
Which is mostly what we had found.
We were hoping to find a suit and maybe some like very foundation, doesn't matter, they don't look like they're from any era type of thing.
That we could sort of adapt and make them look 60s. I was prepared to do a whole lot more sewing than I ended up doing.
Yeah.
But we were digging through and we come out and Nikki found this dress and she showed it to me kind of as a joke. She's like, look at this. Because it literally, it's like electric green.
Well, it was sticking out of the rack and it was just this horrifying. And I expected it to be something 80s because the color was so vivid. It's just, it's poison green. It is so vivid.
And she pulled it out and showed it to me, and I'm like, that's kind of awesome. And not, we had come to this term of finding things and going, God, that's fantastic. And by fantastic, I mean hideous. But this was not. This was fantastic in a really great way.
Except for the...
Oh, it had this giant patent leather bow.
But it was... across the front. It was calcified. Like, I don't know when the last time that thing had seen moisture. It was no longer flexible. It was just like...
So, yeah.
And crumbling away. And you sent me a picture.
We did. We sent Thomas a picture and we're like, I think we found our first official 60s dress. And I think it's fantastic. So I, of course, managed to sort of cough and rip the bow off in the same breath and go, well, we're going to buy it anyway. You might as well deface it here and make sure it's going to work. So somewhere in a Goodwill in Marietta, there's a bow laying forgotten, calcified on the floor, where it will probably remain for the next 20 years.
But that was like, that was the initial find. Like, that was the first thing that we were like, okay, we got this dress for $7. We should be able to costume the rest of the show.
And we had remarkable good luck. I think we were... I think I had in the back of my mind that we had had unreal expectations. Having vintage shops before and going to vintage stores like in Athens where stuff is priced for people who are going to be buying vintage clothing, there was more expensive. Thinking that we were going to find stuff for $7 and $8, I had in the back of my mind that it was not going to work, that we weren't going to be able to do it. And after that first day, when we found 3 dresses,
yeah, we
and
got
some suits and some various things, and they were all
well, we got more the green dress, and then we randomly, completely without any provocation or I mean, we weren't even, I think we were thinking we were done,
yeah,
and
we were eating ice cream.
We look in this window of the store
in Marietta Square.
It was literally like there should have been a light and sort of some angelic music because this dress was in the window and it was
the pink dress.
The pink dress that Wendy wears. It's a little mock neck deal with a little anyway. It's perfect, and we were totally unprepared to find it.
And we ended up finding 4 costume pieces in that shop.
Yeah, we got a vintage. It's 1940s. Era Naval Marine Corps
uniform that had never been worn, and it was it's a beautiful thing.
But it's a women's it's a women's uniform, never been worn. The hem was still pinked; it had never been hemmed, and the pink dress was there. And
some we found
which
some
we
jewelry,
got for cheap. We got a bunch of jewelry for
and
cheap.
And a hat.
That was
and
awesome.
Then there was eBay.
Then there was eBay.
Then there was eBay.
For a lot of other things, but more interestingly, when you had to improvise. You mentioned the beards earlier. Where did the beards come from?
So, Nikki and
especially, first of all, explain why we need beards.
Well, okay, so there's the scene in the play where the boys are dressing up as Muscovites.
Russians.
And so we're like, how are we going to do this? It's the 60s. Okay, they would have on like fedoras or whatever. And for the sake of the argument, KGB. We're going to say they have beards. They're going to be dressed like the KGB. They're going to have on their little overcoats.
There is a line in the... They're talking about vizards, and vizards are masks. So we knew the women had to be masked, and we kind of realized late that, the boys are probably going to be masked.
Yeah, the beards are not optional. Like, we sort of thought the beards might be optional.
Well, we just knew that they needed to be masked. So we said, okay, well, beards will work. They'll be hilarious. So we're like, okay, well, we'll just go and buy some fake fur. How difficult can this be to find fake fur and make beards? We went to 5 stores, Michael's, Joann's, Hancock's, any kind of fabric store you could think of, no one had fake fur. Or if they did, it was pink, blue, or green. And this was just not going to work.
Yeah, and then the only Party City, we went to Party City to see if they had any fake beards, and they didn't. And the only thing that they had that would possibly have worked was literally obscene. And
it was it was from one of those costumes where you create fake chest hair, but it was pubic. It looked pubic. I was just like, this is not acceptable. This is a family show. So we ended up, we're like on the last, I was like, well, you know,
we were
I bought,
in Michael's, so we're like, we can gut some teddy bears.
Yeah, we literally
this
were
is
like,
what we're reduced to.
We were looking at teddy bears going, okay, well, if we cut this in the right way, perhaps we can make a bear out of it.
So the little arms can go up around their ears.
Like, so you know. It'll work. So finally I was like, well, I buy fabric at Walmart, even though it's the big evil and we don't like to shop there. We didn't really have any other choice. So we went to Walmart on a whim and we're walking through and of course we go back to the fabric department and again, no fake fur.
Pink though.
Pink. Pink fake fur, but nothing else. So we turn around and we see this giant metal mesh bin where they normally keep the bouncy balls. This was full of clearance pillows.
And they needed to be clearanced.
They were horrifying. One was a fake mink-looking one.
Which was wonderful and terrible all the same.
And we were sort of looking at that going, well, it was really obviously like fake mink. They would kind of, that could be funny as a beard. But then I unearthed it. And it was brown and black and a little bit of gray fur.
Like
long,
a bear.
Like a bear. In a pillow. And they were huge. And they were like $5. I said, Nikki, we have found the beards. We went back to her house. We bought four of them. We went back to her house. And I spent the rest of the night gutting them and tearing them apart.
Where had I been? Because I came home.
You had been
doing
something with... I think you had rehearsed. That day.
Oh, yeah.
You did.
I was doing scene work, and I get home, and I find them sitting on the couch.
Giggling,
and...
fur and stuffing
and all
everywhere.
The stuffing is everywhere. Like, what are you doing?
Like, making the beards. They're fantastic.
Yeah, we had a big pile of pillow pelts, essentially. And they were on the coffee table for a little while, and my cat was like, hey.
Like, who is that? they don't say
hello.
That. I don't know them. So yeah, next weekend is our final weekend. If you have an opportunity and you are hearing this before the 19th, please come and see the show. It is perfectly free. We ask for a suggested, we don't ask, we suggest a $5 donation if you feel that it is worth $5. It is at Barrington Hall, and directions on what time to get there and how to get there can be found at NorthFultonDramaClub.org. I have one final question. For everyone, after the 20th, or after maybe the 21st when we clean up, what are you going to do with all of your restored free time? Anyone?
I don't have free time still, because...
Oh yeah, you have another show to plan.
Yeah, the big show, my sister's wedding, is the last weekend in June, so there will be mad... let's see, we've got the Bachelorette weekend, and then we've got final preparations for the wedding, and my entire insane Italian family are flying down from New Jersey to have a great big Italian Catholic wedding, and it should
like
be
Uncle Tommy?
Uncle Tommy's coming.
Nice. Yes.
As he says. So, yeah, I will not actually be having any free time. It's all an illusion. I will never sleep again.
Eileen?
I am going to sleep and hang out with my husband.
Poor husband.
Like, who are you again? Yeah. Do you have a key to my house? What's
going
on?
How do I know you? You look vaguely familiar.
We thank your husband very much for allowing us to borrow you for extended periods of time. It's even like today, when there's no show or rehearsal days, and you're still here. We thank you.
Yeah, I think we're going to finish the various household projects that are currently on hold. And sleep.
Sleep.
And
lots of sleep.
And then start planning for the fall.
I can go and read books for a little while that have nothing to do with Shakespeare. I have a Marvin Gaye biography that's sitting there on the coffee table. But I think I'm also, because I'm a sick person, I'm going to go and read All the King's Men again in preparation for the fall.
Nice.
And that's a good way to end it up. Thank you very much for listening to our second podcast. We'll have another one sooner or later, whenever Rusty lets us come back to the house. Thank you very much.